This is Molly Hemingway of The Federalist. Join me, my husband Mark of Real Clear Investigations, 12-time All-American swimmer Riley Gaines, Aaron Wren of The American Conservative, and others for the 2024 Making the Case Conference, Friday, July 12th and Saturday, July 13th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more at issuesetc.org. Making the Case, July 12th and 13th in Chicago. issuesetc.org.
Folks, in 5 weeks, the 2024 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference is already 60% full. Making the Case is your opportunity to meet and hear 12-time All-American swimmer Riley Gaines, journalist Mark and Molly Hemingway, Aaron Wren of The American Conservative, and pastors Chris Roseborough, Brian Wolfmiller, and Will Whedon. The early bird registration fee is $140 and includes three meals. On-campus dorm options are available. For more information, just give us a call, 618-223-8385, or visit issuesetc.org. Making the Case, Friday, July 12th and Saturday, July 13th at Concordia University, Chicago. I wonder why pro-abortion messaging is so effective. Do you remember A Handmaid's Tale, that movie that was supposed to be the dystopian future of if the pro-life movement got their way? Why is that effective, and how can pro-life messaging be accommodated to be as effective? Joining us to talk about pro-life messaging, Dr. Carrie Gress. She's a fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, author of several books, including her latest, The End of Woman, How Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us, and a recent column for The Federalist, The Pro-Life Movement Has a Storytelling Problem. Dr. Gress, welcome back.
Thanks so much, Todd. It's great to be back.
What do you mean when you say that the pro-life movement has that messaging or storytelling problem?
No, that's a great question. I think that what we have been seeing so much of is that the left has really done an amazing job of presenting a narrative of what the pro-choice movement is. And we can see that with The Handmaid's Tale, with red robes and the bonnets and all of that, and sort of giving women the impression that the pro-life option is really horrible and going to be awful. And so we haven't really countered that in the pro-life movement. We've been very focused on reason and trying to make sound arguments in that kind of angle, but we haven't really focused on sort of these visual sound bites the left uses. And so that's really what this article talks about, is how do we as pro-lifers start honing our message so that we're actually conveying what the truth of our message is, instead of kind of getting clobbered through these visuals.
Has the overturning of Roe v. Wade made this problem worse?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think it's exposed what has been happening really for the last 50 years. The left really focused on culture and visuals and messaging, also emotions. I think we're in a very post-rational time. And so what we're seeing is that the pro-life movement is really focused on how do we deal with this legally, and we weren't really focused on how do we deal with this culturally. And so as soon as you remove Roe, suddenly you really see the rot that's there, and kind of what people have come to believe over 50 years of being told over and over again that abortion is really necessary for women's happiness. So I think it's exposed a lot, but it hasn't. I think that's really an opportunity for us to start reframing our messaging and putting it in a way that the left is doing it, but obviously with better arguments.
Why are the pro-abortion movement's messages effective?
Well, they're effective because they really hit the emotional side of women. They also help women kind of visually be afraid of things that they want them to be afraid of, or they want them to be drawn to things that they want to be drawn to. So, for example, they always portray women who are pro-choice as very attractive and articulate and successful. And then alternately, you've got the women who are pro-life, who are considered to be unattractive, submissive, in a very passive and ugly way, and just downright frumpy. So that's one of the reasons why they've been so successful, is because they've just over and over again provided these visual cues for women, and women really identify with them in a very unique and kind of emotional way, and that's where the success is coming from.
What is the false binary that the left has very successfully gotten into women's heads?
Yeah, I think this is, you know, what I've really just outlined is that the human mind loves a binary, loves black or white, yes or no, kind of easy options. And this is what the left has provided us with, is kind of the easy option of their sophisticated, attractive, ambitious, successful kind of woman. And then on the right is those of us who are pro-life, who they've really been able to portray as unsuccessful, not rational, not bright, not smart, frumpy, all these kinds of stereotypes. Obviously, a healthy, ordered woman is going to be somewhere in the middle of that. And that's really the hard part. And I think the work of the pro-life movement is to start presenting women in that middle where you're healthy and ordered and you also love your husband and your children and you want to see society flourish instead of being built on this idea that somehow our children must be sacrificed in order for us to be successful. So that's the binary that they've set up. And I think that's what our job is to really do, is break that down and present a different kind of woman.
You say that the pro-life movement needs to learn how to speak women's language. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, well, so often we talk about success stories. We talk about these women who've been in these terrible situations and then kind of show how their life has been successful because they didn't have the abortion and they still had a beautiful and compelling, purposeful life. But those are the kind of visuals that are really hard for women to see and to find hope in, especially if they're not in a crisis situation. But that messaging, what a woman sees is on an emotional level, because we're very compassionate, we can sort of imagine ourselves in that woman's place, is not something attractive or interesting to us. It's something that kind of repels us a little bit. And, you know, if we look at the opposite of this, and again, women's magazines and Hollywood and all the influencers that are out there, women are really drawn towards that which is attractive and aspirational and beautiful and compelling and, you know, kind of almost life-giving, ironically. And so those are the things that I think we need to start zeroing in on, is that kind of message, instead of just these hard stories that women don't feel like that's a place where they want to go and ruminate and spend a lot of time thinking about. They're actually kind of repelled by that, and they want to be focused more on things that women's minds really are drawn to. And so this is, you know, the left has been so good at this because they don't really have, it's built on an ideology. And so in order to navigate that ideology, to sort of hide it, they have to really package everything in really attractive ways. And we think, oh, well, let's just package it in a way that's very intellectually compelling. And we've completely missed this side of it. So it's, I think it's an exciting thing to consider, like what happens if we start doing both? We have really great arguments and it's packaged in a way that's really beautiful, compelling, things like magazines. We don't have a single pro-life magazine at the newsstand. You know, these kinds of things that are bread and butter for the left, we need to start getting into.
Is the pro-life donor base unintentionally, unwittingly kind of part of the problem?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question and something to consider. You know, we know that most of the donors are men who have the best of intentions and are incredible people, but they like those stories of success. They like those stories of hearing about the woman who saved a baby or the baby saves. And those are obviously incredibly important. But if that's all that we're giving our money to is those kinds of areas, then again, we're missing out on the way in which women think, what they're drawn to. And it's not really women who are most of the backers behind the pro-life movement. And so that's, they're out in front on it. And that's obviously very important too. But I think that if we can start putting together, again, the way that women think and then the donor dollars and start thinking of this in long term, that's going to go a lot farther than just, again, promoting these success stories that are usually very not attractive to the general woman.
So let's get into some specifics. How would you suggest the pro-life message be refocused?
I think it just needs some good advertising money, some good money to make it more attractive. I think something really as simple as a magazine at the checkout stand. There hasn't ever been one, as far as I know. There isn't one currently now. And it's those places that women are really drawn in, and they, you know, it's those ways in which we form the issues that women start to think about. So that, or we could think about a TV series. You know, one of my daughters is currently watching The Gilmore Girls. I've never watched The Gilmore Girls, but between that and Hallmark shows and whatnot, we can imagine very easily movies and TV shows that are dealing with these concepts that are actually portraying motherhood and women as mothers, not just biologically, but also spiritually and psychologically. in ways that are really beautiful and healthy and compelling, instead of it just being kind of an option, which it certainly feels like culturally today.
You say conservatives have largely depended on the truth about women and children to be the message, while continually cycling through the debate in a kind of crisis mode. What do you mean by that?
So I think what we have done is, you know, as I mentioned previously, we really think about this in terms of reason and truth and what is going to be good for the family, the woman, the child, all of these kinds of talking points as messaging. But we don't think of it in terms of visual or even long-term. And I think so much of our time has been spent dealing with the next vote, dealing with the next election, dealing with polls, that we've become very reactionary, and we're trying to address things that, you know, as we've seen now that Roe is gone, the left has deeply seeded their concepts into the culture. We need to follow that and stop thinking in terms of just what's the next vote on the state level, and start thinking, how do we start reseeding, planting new ideas into the minds of women and all the people that are influencing these women to get abortions. So I think it's a much longer and bigger kind of project to think about, how do we help women kind of reconceive themselves in a very different light, instead of, again, back to this binary that the left has created for us.
If you were given $1 million to craft a pro-life marketing campaign for women, what would you do with it?
Probably the first thing I would do is start a magazine. I think that it just feels like, you know, magazines are really incredible because of the fact that they address a lot of the things that women are interested in. Women really like multitasking. They really like being drawn into an image that's beautiful and compelling. That's probably the first thing I would do. If I had many more millions, I would probably start a TV network, or I would be funding one that is already doing this kind of thing. And gratefully, we've got some elements that are doing that and moving into that field, but I would probably do it in a way that's more explicit as far as what, you know, the pro-life messaging, not in a way that's on the nose or hits people over the head, but I think that a strong case can be made for it. And we haven't really said very much about motherhood, you know, that's positive in 50 years. We've been really telling women that their priority needs to be work. And, you know, then sadly, a lot of women realize in their later years that they misplace so much of their energies in ways that are now damaging them as they're older. So I think it's just a matter of trying to help women, especially when they're young, really see we are not communists, we're not Marxists. Work is not the priority. The family always needs to be the priority. And trying to convey that message and really push out a lot of this Marxist ideology that we seem to be soaking in day and night, I think it would be really important and obviously a great way to spend money that would have really long-term effects.
Dr. Carrie Gress is a fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, author of several books, including her latest, The End of Woman, How Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us, and a recent column for The Federalist, The Pro-Life Movement Has a Storytelling Problem. You can read it and purchase The End of Woman at our website, issuesetc.org, click Talk On Demand Archives. Dr. Gress, thank you again.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Tuesday on Issues Etc., we'll respond to your email, talkback@issuesetc.org, and the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. And we'll look forward to Sunday morning, according to the 3-year lectionary, talking with Pastor Sean Denzer about Jesus' declaration, I am the vine, in John chapter 15. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
I am beautiful because I am fearfully and wonderfully made.
I am accepted because I'm a part of His family through Jesus' shed blood. Unity Lutheran School in East St. Louis, Illinois, shines the light of Christ in one of the most impoverished cities in America. Learn how to support their mission work at unityesl.org. Unityesl.org.
Today, with the help of the Holy Spirit, I say yes to God in His ways.
The Lord has redeemed His people.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Morning Chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live, weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
If you continue in my word, you are truly my disciples. And you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free.
Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia University, Chicago.
Indeed, the quest for truth is at the core of a university's purpose. The liberal arts, illuminated by the revealed truths of Scripture, are powerful for equipping students for a life of self-governance. A disciple is one who follows the Master. So what does it mean to follow Jesus? He said that it means to take up one's cross. The cross is thus the symbol of dying for others, of dying to self for the sake of serving others. And a life of service is a life well lived.
Truth, Freedom, Vocation, Concordia University, Chicago, cuchicago.edu.